brought to you by Penguin.
Islands of Mercy by Rose Tremaine, read by Katie McGrath. From Lines Written Among the Euganean Hills, 1818, by Percy Bysshe Shelley. Many a green isle needs must be in the deep wide sea of misery, or the mariner, worn and wan, never thus could voyage on. Part 1, Chapter 1, The Ruby Necklace. She came from Dublin. In that crowded city, she'd worked for a haberdasher and presided over the slow death of her mother, after which she discovered in herself an unexpected yearning to leave Ireland and see the world. Her name was Clorinda Morrissey, and she was 38 years old when she arrived in the English city of Bath. The year was 1865. She was not beautiful, but she had a smile of great sweetness and a soft voice that could soothe and calm the soul. Clorinda knew that Bath was not exactly the world, but she'd been told it was built on seven hills, like Rome, and that it hosted galas and illuminations in the spring and autumn seasons. And these things took on some splendour in her mind. It was also, she heard, a place where very many rich people assembled to take the waters, or simply to take their leisure. And where the rich congregated, there was always money to be made. Poorly lodged at first on Avon Street, the lower end of town, where the gutters were choked with refuse, among which dozens of pigs wandered round in the daytime, and at night lay down to sleep in their own comfortable filth, Clorinda Morrissey began her sojourn in Bath by working as a milliner's assistant in the cold basement of a shop on Milsom Street. This work was punishing to the hands. Though she kept reminding herself that it afforded her a living, she soon came to feel that this living resembled nothing so much as a kind of dying, and it made her furious to think that she'd left Dublin only to find herself suffering from feelings of collapse and decline. She vowed to alter her lot as quickly as possible before her spirit failed her. The only article of value she possessed was a ruby necklace. It was an object of some beauty. 20 blood-red stones strung upon a delicate gold thread with a golden clasp. It had come to Clorinda recently from her dead mother, who in turn had had it from her dead mother, and she in monotonous rotation from hers. For long and featureless years, this necklace had been passed from one place of safekeeping to another. It had hardly been worn by any of its owners, but rather had taken on the petrified status of an heirloom, kept in its satin-lined box, dipped in methylated spirits once in a while, to clean it and show its brilliance to the air. For long periods of time, it was completely forgotten, as though it didn't exist at all. Rumours that the great-grandmother had gotten it by dishonourable means seeped down the generations, but these, if anything, only made each successive inheritor more keen to hang on to it. All of them believed that the ruby necklace would one day find its true purpose, but what that purpose might be, even if it was speculated upon, was never decided. The necklace remained hidden away in peculiar places, under floorboards, inside a broken long-case clock, in the secret compartment of an empty wall cupboard, where bowls of hyacinth bulbs were nurtured through the winter darkness. Now, however, Clorinda Morrissey, toiling over stiff bonnets and the fabrication of cloth flowers to attach to them, in her cold basement, made a vertiginous decision regarding the ruby necklace. She was going to sell it. To the voice inside her which protested that she was betraying the status of the necklace as an heirloom, to be passed on to future generations, she replied that she had no children, so there was no future generation to pass it on to. To the idea that by moral right she should leave it to one of her brother's girls back in Dublin, she gave scarcely any consideration. These two nieces, Moira and Aisling, meant nothing at all to her. They struck her as dim, morose children, who probably did not even know of the existence of the necklace. And the rubies, she now saw uncommonly clearly, had no value whatsoever to anyone, until or unless that value could be realized. Surely, after all these silent generations had lived and died, it was time for someone to put them to use. She took the necklace first to a pawnbroker. This elderly person applied a cup-shaped object to his eye and gazed at the rubies through it. Clorinda Morrissey, watching him with her sharp gaze, saw a tiny froth of saliva escape.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?